China is in a very uncomfortable position right now.
China warns of a U.S.-North Korea collision course. It's Thursday, March 9th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Join us too online at VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, few strategies exist to deal with North Korea. Trees may be the strategy for Australia. Women take to the streets and fashion from the movies. We try it all on right now on VOA Asia. Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi has called on North Korea to halt its missile and nuclear programs and urged South Korea and the United States to end joint war games that Pyongyang regards as a prelude to war. The Chinese diplomat said tensions on the Korean Peninsula are like two accelerating trains coming towards each other, with neither side willing to give way. Speaking with reporters on the sidelines of an annual high-level political meeting, Wang Yi criticized Pyongyang for ignoring international sanctions and opposition to its nuclear and missile programs. He also argued that large-scale military exercises by the United States in South Korea were also raising tensions. He asked, quote, are the two sides really ready for a head-on collision? He said, quote, our priority now is to flash the red light and apply the brakes on both trains. At the same time, however, Wang tried to distance Beijing from the ongoing dispute, arguing that the nuclear issue in the peninsula was mainly between North Korea and the United States. Mr. Wang also called on the deployment of the THAAD U.S. anti-missile system a big problem for South Korean-China relations, saying it undermines Chinese national security. The deployment, which began Tuesday, followed North Korea's firing of four more missiles into the Sea of Japan on Monday. North Korean analyst Go Myung-hyun, a research fellow at the Seoul-based Asan Institute for Policy Studies, tells VOA's Victor Beatty that China finds itself in a security dilemma.
The main problem here in Northeast Asia is North Korea's desire to be recognized as a nuclear state, and therefore North Korea is engaging in all these nuclear provocations, which ends up affecting China as well. For example, the THAAD deployment that just happened, that's ongoing right now. One of the biggest targets of the THAAD is clearly North Korea, but China is also affected by this because the THAAD radar can look into the China's airspace and also track China's rockets or missile launches.
Is China expressing exasperation with North Korea?
China is expressing anger, I guess, with North Korea. There's no doubt about it. And at the same time, China is expressing anger with South Korea. So China is in a very uncomfortable position right now where its relationship with two closest countries, namely North Korea and South Korea, those relations are at the very bottom, historically speaking. So I think in many ways, China's strategic interests are being affected negatively at this moment.
China's foreign minister also called on South Korea to avoid making the mistake in deploying the U.S. anti-missile defense system, THAAD, urged Seoul to halt the deployment. Will that persuade South Korea, which has, you know, a lot of business ties with China?
For South Korea, the top priority right now is national security. Most of the North Korean missiles are aimed at South Korea or Japan. And the reason why North Korean missiles are aimed at Japan is because in case of contingency in the Korean Peninsula, North Korea wants to prevent the American troops based in Japan to reinforce South Korean side. So South Korea is at the end of the North Korean provocation at this moment. So therefore, it's priority for South Korea to come out with countermeasures to North Korean missile provocations. South Korea is not going to somehow put that on low priority because of its economic relationship with China.
China has closed several retail stores of South Korea's Lotte Group, which approved a land swap with the South Korean military last week to allow installation of the THAAD system. U.S. spokesman Mark Toner reaffirmed that THAAD is a purely defensive measure to protect not just South Korea, but U.S. forces in the country from North Korean attack. As one of isolated North Korea's few supporters, the international community has long looked to Beijing to help resolve ongoing tensions on the peninsula. We invite you to read more on our top story. Follow us on Facebook at VOA Asia and also on the voanews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. 30 killed, dozens wounded in Afghan hospital attack. South Korean court to rule on Park impeachment. Video emerges of murdered Kim Jong-nam's son. China grants preliminary approval to 38 new Trump trademarks. Analysts say military options against North Korea fraught with danger. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and a whole lot more on Facebook at VOA Asia, and also check out our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Frustrated that North Korea has been undeterred by international sanctions, U.S. President Donald Trump's administration is conducting a policy review to look for more effective ways to counter Pyongyang's missile and nuclear threats. Adding new urgency to this long-standing security threat is North Korea's accelerated efforts to develop the capability to strike the U.S. mainland with a nuclear-tipped intercontinental ballistic missile. U.S. administration officials say all options are on the table to deal with the increasing North Korean threat. That includes military action and deploying nuclear weapons in South Korea and Japan. Regional security analyst Grant Newsham from the Japan's Forum for Strategic Studies in Tokyo says considering military options should not be done lightly.
Really, if a military strike approach is considered, that the U.S. had better be ready to go all in and be ready to finish it.
Preemptive U.S. military air or missile strikes to take out North Korean nuclear and missile sites are not likely to end the nuclear threat, but there is a high risk of deadly counterattacks that could draw China and the entire region into war. Bong Yoon-chik of the Yonsei University Institute for North Korean Studies in Seoul says such activity would put significant strain on U.S. and South Korean relations.
They will put almost all South Korean citizens against the United States, because it is totally against the very purpose of security partnership between the United States and South Korea.
By taking unilateral military action against North Korea, the United States would be putting its own security needs ahead of its allies in Asia, and it would likely trigger a regional political backlash. Analysts say even limited military actions could easily draw the United States into another military quagmire that could cause massive devastation and economic ruin. Even if U.S. strikes could destroy all of the country's nuclear and long-range missile facilities, North Korea can still attack Seoul and other regions near the inter-Korean border by using artillery and chemical weapons that could kill millions in South Korea. Analysts say reintroducing nuclear weapons in South Korea and deploying them in Japan would likely legitimize the North Korea's nuclear arsenal and justify its efforts to develop long-range ballistic missile deterrence. It would also weaken the international commitment to maintain sanctions against Pyongyang, and it could even spark a global nuclear buildup. Bong says imposing real economic pain remains the best of the bad options to restrain North Korea.
You have to put North Korea in a situation in which the leadership has to decide between continuous pursuit of nuclear weapons and missiles and its survival.
But Newsham says the international sanctions imposed on North Korea have not had a restraining influence so far, in part because of lax enforcement.
This has allowed the regime to get the money that it needs to survive. And that has always been the regime's key vulnerability, is the need for money.
The North's key economic trading partner, China, is reluctant to strictly implement crippling measures that might destabilize the region or lead to the collapse of its ally. North Korea has also been able to get around the imposed international restrictions by using companies friendly to countries like China to act as illicit fronts. Last month, the United Nations accused North Korea of flouting sanctions through trade in prohibited goods with evasion techniques that are increasing in scale, scope, and sophistication. To more effectively crack down on North Korea's illicit financial dealings, the United States would likely have to target more Chinese companies to do business with North Korea. Happening now in Asia, Seoul's intelligence service says a video that surfaced of a young man claiming to be the son of Kim Jong-nam is authentic. Kim Han-sol did not disclose his location in the video, but says he's safe. His father, who is the half-brother of North Korea's leader, was killed in Kuala Lumpur in February. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We hope you're having a great day, and we're glad you're with us on VOA Asia. The ability of trees to offset carbon emissions has been questioned after a new study revealed that common Australian trees can't store as much carbon as previously thought. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Researchers at Western Sydney University say the results released Tuesday challenge international assumptions that rising levels of carbon dioxide will fertilise trees and increase the absorption of the gas from the air. The Australian team says its study indicates that global estimates of carbon storage in forests could be too high. For the last 5 years, eucalyptus trees on the edge of Sydney have been subjected to elevated concentrations of carbon dioxide through a series of 28-metre-high pipes. The experiment is referred to by some academics as a so-called climate change time machine, as it mimics the sort of CO2 levels the planet could see by 2050. Results have shown that poor soil quality, and in particular insufficient phosphorus, a major plant nutrient, have prevented the native trees from absorbing more of the gas. Professor David Ellsworth from the University of Western Sydney believes the study could have serious implications for other subtropical and tropical forested regions.
We think these results are really a bellwether for what we might observe in other areas that are also phosphorus limited, like our Australian soils. There are some similarities in our site in terms of how it compares to, say, tropical forests, and there are some differences as well. But lacking other studies, and this being the only one in a low phosphorus soil, that really represents our current knowledge of what we might find in large areas that might be phosphorus limited.
The so-called free air CO2 experiment began in 2012 and is expected to last for another 5 years. It's a collaboration between six Australian universities and other institutions overseas. The work is published in the Nature Climate Change Journal. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com. Online news for a changing world.
This news alert from VOA Asia. The United Nations Security Council is meeting about North Korea's latest missile test. China's foreign minister proposed North Korea suspend its weapons programs and ask the United States and South Korea to halt joint military drills. Washington is currently reviewing its North Korean policy. Steve Miller's Asia in a Minute has this story and more. Check it out on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue now with VOA Asia, it's International Women's Day, and this year the annual event is being marked in many ways around the world. Here, of course, in Washington, things are happening. Thousands of women from across the United States took the day off to show their economic value, a move coinciding with International Women's Day. Normally, when you're a parent, you don't tell your kids to go play out in the streets, but when you grow up, you can. Ali Ogden went out there with our intern, Sandra Young. And Ali, I understand that there were a lot of women out in the streets today here in Washington.
Yes, there were. The specific part of the march that I was on was from in front of the Department of Labor to the John Marshall Park. There were quite a number of women, but there are protests all throughout, or movements rather, all throughout the city today at Lafayette Park, Freedom Plaza. Mine was just, you know, one segment of it.
Mm-hmm. And what were the women marching about? Were there specific causes that you saw out there that they were talking about and maybe chanting about?
Yes, absolutely. Mainly it was about pay equality. As things currently stand, women make 80 cents for every dollar that a man makes. Mm. So around that's the average figure, more or less. So pay equality, also a livable wage and the right to go to work and feel safe in one's work environment and not be, you know, sexually harassed or harassed in any other way. So those were the main things that people were there for. And you did see this kind of sea of red, red being the new color for this particular Women's Day. A lot of the movements were started by the same group that had started the Women's March back in January, that had organized the Women's March back in January. So on that day, you saw a sea of pink, and today you saw just a sea of red.
Okay, and I see that you're wearing red as well, so you blended in very well.
Yes, indeed.
Our own Steve Miller is wearing a red shirt today, so thank you all for taking part in that. What were some of the things that were happening across the country that you're aware of with this event?
Well, gosh, I mean, right in our own backyard, we had a lot of impact from this movement. Really, there were many, because a lot of women did not show up and chose to take the day off, and not go to work as a sort of day of protest. Several schools had to shut down because there weren't enough teachers to, you know, open the schools and teach the kids. So we had 9 D.C. charter schools that were closed. Also, Prince George's County schools were closed. And also the Alexandria school system closed down. Now, the schools did specifically say that they were not making any kind of stand or protest themselves, but they just didn't have enough teachers to teach the kid that day. So that makes it kind of challenging.
And these schools in Northern Virginia, very close to Washington. And that does kind of make the point, though. That was the whole reason for not being there, is the fact that women are very important and hold important positions. And if you have to shut down schools, then they've achieved their goal, at least in a small measure.
Absolutely. I think so. I think it was an effective message.
I also saw where several local restaurants that were owned primarily by women were also doing their own sort of marking of the day, whether they were maybe limiting the amount of menu offerings they had or donating all of their money to charity or rather, you know, women's related issues.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I know the several restaurants were donating their profits to women's organizations and women's groups. So also a lot of activity there as well.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, Allie Ogden, thank you so much. Allie handles a lot of our social media, and you can find much more on our VOA Asia Facebook page. Developing at this hour in Asia, Manny Pacquiao's fight with Amir Khan is off after a promised $38 million from an unnamed investment group failed to materialize. The Filipino boxer and 8-division champion confirmed the fight with Khan on their respective Twitter feeds last week. Stay up to date all day with VOA Asia Facebook. Now in VOA Asia, perhaps if you're enjoying the day off for International Women's Day, you might be checking out some of the latest fashions in stores and online. Every year, the Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising Museum in Los Angeles holds an exhibit. It showcases the works of Oscar-nominated fashion designers of that year. VOA got a closer look at the designs of this year's costumes and spoke to one of the nominees.
Fashion and costume play an important role in Hollywood films, such as this year's La La Land. It is said costume designers help paint each frame of film. At FIDM's annual Art of Motion Picture Costume Design Exhibition, the public gets to take a closer look at the costumes of Oscar-nominated movies.
Oh, well, it's an incredible museum right here at the Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising. We have over 100 costumes from 23 films, including 4 of the nominees for Most Outstanding Costume Design for the Oscars.
This is the 25th year the Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising has held its exhibition. This year's exhibition showcases Oscar nominees such as Joanna Johnson, costume designer for Allied, starring Brad Pitt and Marion Cotillard. Consolata Boyle, costume designer for Florence Foster Jenkins, starring Meryl Streep and Hugh Grant. And Mary Zofris, costume designer for the movie La La Land, starring Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling. Colleen Atwood, who won an Oscar this year for costume design for the movie Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, spoke to VOA about what it took to outfit the characters in the film.
It's over 4,000 costumes to dress the people, the background and the featured people in this film. On top of that, we made about 1,200 costumes. You know, I had Colin Farrell, I had Carmen Elojo, I had like so many amazing, you know, people that would come for a few days, but you still, you had to do something great for each one of them. So it was quite a journey for me. It was a lot of work, but very rewarding.
This exhibition also displays a variety of iconic costume designs from other hit movies.
This costume, this gown alone, this could probably cost about $10,000, if not more. So what I love about it is just it looks so couture. And it reminds me of like a Miss Indonesia national costume. All she's missing is the Garuda feathers.
The annual costume exhibition runs until April 22. From Los Angeles, VOA.
And we'd like to thank our VOA Indonesian service for bringing us that report today. You've been listening to VOA Asia. We'd like to say hello to 81-year-old Manta Tanaka from Japan. Manta is now blind and was a former full-time teacher who's been listening to VOA for more than 60 years and enjoys listening to VOA Asia. Manta still helps high school students and would like them to enjoy and learn live American English through our program. Well, Manta, we'll write back to you shortly, but I just want to let you know that we would be honored to have you share VOA Asia with your students. Thank you so much. We hope to provide them with a variety of words and phrases through the stories that we cover each day. You know, we think teachers are among some of the most special people in the world. We appreciate your important work reaching out to younger generations. Thanks so much for writing. If you'd like to send us an email, you can do that at voaasia@voanews.com. And you can continue the VOA Asia experience all day online at our website, voanews.com, and by Facebook on VOA Asia. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Carl Starling, managing editor Diane Gao, and our great VOA Asia team, including Steve Miller and Ali Ogden. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is in the midst of its most severe drug epidemic since the 1980s. Nonetheless, the country is positioning itself within the international system to fight it, thanks to close cooperation with its international partners and with mechanisms created over the past decades to fight drug trafficking, said Assistant Secretary for International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs William Brownfield. He spoke at a press conference to introduce the congressionally mandated 2017 International Narcotics Control Strategy Report, submitted annually by the State Department. The report describes the efforts of key countries to attack all aspects of the international drug trade. This year's report, said Assistant Secretary Brownfield, is a story of 40 years of building capabilities, intelligence, coordination, specialized units, new laws, and relationships around the world. So, for example, the United States and Mexico have developed cooperative mechanisms, coordination, joint operations, and intelligence sharing that have improved the ability of both countries to address the issue of drug trafficking across the U.S.-Mexico border. We are better positioned to deal with it today, as this annual report demonstrates, because we have mechanisms cooperation, said Assistant Secretary Brownfield. We have regional groupings. We have equipment and technology. We have specialized units. We have legislation and statutes on the books in more than 100 different countries that allow us to address the issue internationally, multinationally, regionally, and bilaterally among governments. It is much better that we are confronting this situation, this historic opioid crisis today, with the architecture that we have in place now than it would have been 20 years ago, he said. I believe we have a good strategy. I believe this international drug report lays out a good global architecture for more than 100 nations of the world to cooperate and work together to address the drug issue.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.